Welcome to the CG Pro podcast. This is episode 68, and today we have Kino Skilaba with us today. Kino is an incredible artist, an amazing art director. He's worked on just so many awesome films that it would take me the whole podcast to list them all, but things like Avatar and the Day of the Dead, Walking Dead, all kinds of games and movies, too many to list. Kino also is very kind in coming and doing things with CG Pro, the school. If you like what you hear today, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com, join our free Facebook group, and I'll have a couple more announcements at the end. But Kino, welcome. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey. Thank you.
So great to have you here. I've been really looking forward to this conversation. We've spent a lot of time together in recent years. And where to begin? What I like to start doing with these is just asking a little bit about how you got here. What did you always want to do what you do today? Were there some things that like happened as a kid that inspired you to get into film?
It's a crazy journey. My dad and my mom, both my dad and my mom, they were both artists, but they didn't work as artists. My dad worked at Ford Motor Company building cars and stuff, but they both loved monster movies, action movies. So I was taken to tons of movies when I was a kid, from like even a baby, I was brought to movies, and I was brought to horror movies. So I was in, I saw everything. And then my dad gave me comic books from like 1 year old, and he would come home from work and he would sit down at the table and he would take his like playing cards, because he was Italian and my mom was Puerto Rican, so they were gamblers. So he would use the playing cards as rulers, and he would draw me cars and stuff like that. And then sometimes he would come home from Ford Motor Company, and we had paintings of like the werewolf and stuff, because he would paint the interior parts of the cars. And he would have all these colors, so he'd come home with little paintings of monsters and stuff. So they brought me up with like tons of like everything, knowledge, education, and everything. So I was brought up drawing my whole life, but I was brought up learning why am I drawing about things too. So my dad taught me everything from military history to tons of languages, all that stuff. I ended up going to military academy for 8 years, from 8 years old till 16. Wow. And art school on top of that in Puerto Rico too. So I divided it up, but I've always been around education. It's like learning more and more. And, and then I've always wanted to be an artist, but I also wanted to be, I thought that I was going to be either a paleontologist, a superhero, or an artist, because I wanted to be like either Batman or paleontologist or an artist.
I wanted to be a paleontologist as well.
Oh, yeah, dude.
Fossil collector when I was a little
kid. Oh, yeah, same here. Awesome. When I was 6 years old, my dad gave me a little booklet of the little fossils, and I had my little sketchbook. I had my little tools, and I would go outside, because I was in upstate New York, and we had gigantic quarries. It was untouched land, and fossils everywhere. I was getting trilobites, everything. It was cool.
Wow.
So, going back to the question, like what I wanted to do is I love knowledge. I loved everything. So my dad and me, he built models with me. So I was into model building as a child. I was into why things worked and everything. So instead of like really doing artwork, I really wanted to know how to build things, There's a saying that Michelangelo is an artist, and then they were talking to Leonardo da Vinci, and Leonardo da Vinci was, I'm just the engineer who loves to draw. And that's how I kind of see myself, because I see myself as an artist, but I'm more into piecing things together and grabbing things and creating new cultures, to creating characters, to anything. I'm into mix matching, so I've always knew that I was going to be an artist, and I got into comic books, drew comic books my whole life. My first year of school was at Joe Kubert Comic Book School, But then I realized that I don't want to just do comic books. I love Sid Mead my whole life too. So, and Sid Mead did cars like my dad. So I was like, I went to school for industrial design, major in transportation and getting space analysis. So designing space shuttles and stuff like that. And then I got into military history, got into history. So I studied everything. A lot of my friends, I went to all over the place. I went to different schools and stuff. But a lot of my friends that did illustration, they were taught, I'm going to study the history of art. And I didn't study the history of art. I studied anthropology, cultural anthropology. So it's almost like the reason this artwork is happening is because this culture right now is going through a major change. And this major change is influencing this artwork to change into things like that. So that's what I end up studying everything. And then I just went all over the place and was like, okay, I don't want to work for NASA for 10 years on a little bolt. I want to design maybe 10 spaceships that'll never fly. I'm going into movies. I'm going into video games. I'm going into comic books. So that's how I went into my career that way.
Wow. Well, there's a lot of things there that I didn't know about you. But it makes a lot of sense. Being the curious person that's what my takeaway from that. You're just very curious.
Yeah.
You want to try everything.
Why is everything built?
Yeah.
And then since what we do, Photoshop, you do 3D and you do compositing. It's like, what do you do? We see the whole image as one, but we see it as, I know what that piece is. I know what the behind that layer is. I know what that node is. I know what this is. So I look at the world like that, like how to recreate everything.
So you went to Art Center, right?
Went to Art Center for 1 year. Yes.
For a year. Okay. Yeah. And then what, coming out of college, what were some of the first things that you did professionally?
Well, I was getting jobs within college.
Okay. Yeah.
So I would get a job and then I would go back to college because I was like wanting to continue. So the first thing I did was I did some stuff for Judge Dredd, comic book stuff. And then I did some stuff for heavy metal. What was happening is I was, during my time, I was doing Photoshop when Photoshop was 2.5. And so I was doing the first fine art that ever came out. And I was on different magazines like French magazines. I was on photo magazines and stuff. And then I got a free like kind of scholarship thing to come to Brooks Institute in Santa Barbara for 6 months. And they just let me have the lab thing while I work with another student, which was a friend of mine, Paul Hopkins, which was a photographer. And we were putting artwork and photography together. And that's how we started doing it. Cause everybody was like, oh, Photoshop's not an art tool. It's a photo tool. It's like, no, no. One layer. We didn't have layers during that time. It's like,
wow. Yeah. So what gave you that kind of, I don't know, insight into seeing a tool for doing something that it wasn't supposed to be for?
Well, doing that's what industrial design is. Industrial design is creating something out of nothing. So then you got to create all the little nothings out of other somethings that are nothing. So it's like, okay, so if I need to create, say, this mouse or something out of nothing. First off, I'm going to have metal, I'm going to have copper, I'm going to have to melt it down, I have to break it up, I'm going to have some type of plastic that I'm going to have to find a way to extract from plants, I'm going to have to find a way to take clay and mold it into shape, make a prototype, put it in, pour it in. So I think on that kind of level of with everything. So with that in mind, that's why I ended up just going and doing everything, just breaking apart and just going, okay, I'm going to do a little bit of this. I'm going to do a little bit of artwork. I'm going to do a little bit of storyboards. I'm going to get into the movie industry. I'm going to do concepts, but they first want me to do storyboards. I'm going to do comic books. So
I guess in trying to figure out how things work, it seems like you went through some places where people teach you this is how it's done.
Oh yeah, yeah, I went, yeah.
And like that, you sort of learn the rules.
Cal State Long Beach. I went to Central Missouri State. Went to UCLA. Went to American Film Institute. I went to I went to just different schools just going, okay. And I was like, I don't want to finish my degree. I just want to continue my degree. And then I started doing anthropology. Anthropology is what I think enhanced my artwork the most. Anthropology and industrial design. Industrial design did it technically, but anthropology made me go, I know what I want to create now. I know all these different cultures that I like and all these different things I don't like, but I'm going to make all the pieces that I like and make my own culture and then make another culture that will combat it. Or so I created worlds in my head. And plus, I was always into science fiction and I was always into fantasy and fiction and everything. So I read a lot. So I always wanted to be like William Gibson Neuromancer, you know, have the best computer. So when I remember when I graduated from high school, my dad was like, okay, I'm gonna get you a car. You know, it's gonna be a cheap car or whatever, but you know, you deserved a car. And I remember telling my dad, like, I don't want a car, Dad. I want a Commodore 64.
Oh, man.
I wanted one of them so much. I got a Commodore 64.
I'm jealous. Even now, I'm jealous.
And it was like, that was like 1983, 84. And yeah. I thought I was the coolest thing. And I was, you know, programming word games during that time, learning C++ or whatever it was back then. And I got into games my whole life. And that's what I think did it, was the technology, that I wasn't afraid of technology, that it made me understand that, oh, man. And plus Tron, when Tron came out, Tron and Road Warrior and Blade Runner are the three movies that molded me pretty much. You know, when that came out, I was like, you could still be a warrior and knowledgeable and have technology all around you. So I kind of grasped into that, became like a cyber geek type person. And right. Always into Dungeons and Dragons and stuff. So,
wow. Really cool. I mean, you just tried, it seems like you've just been fascinated by trying things and seeing what works and learning from it. But also, it really interesting to hear you say that a lot of it came from anthropology. I don't think I've ever heard anyone say that before. Like,
you know, because people don't really quite get it, because a lot of artists just study the history of art.
Yeah.
So they just study the sequence of art. They don't study why these curvatures are of, say, why the curves of the Renaissance came about after the Dark Ages.
Mm.
How all this organization, or why did Art Nouveau come out and was all natural like that, is because we are constantly building industrialization, coming, destroying things, building, constantly building, and people got back into nature again and start bringing up the roots and stuff. So just all types of things that people don't get. And then I was like, oh, and I didn't get it either until I took anthropology. And I took, it was called Marxist, there's a class called Marxist anthropology, and it was the study of every culture and revolution and what came afterwards. Wow. And I realized that's what art was.
Yeah.
Every single art comes after something gets destroyed.
That's right.
And something new arises. So then I got into all that and started studying all that. And then I learned so much stuff. And to the point that I was just like, I know nothing. I'm a baby in a world of like, my mind was blown. I was like, okay, I'll never be bored again. And I can create so much and there's so much to learn. And it's like, I don't understand how anybody could be bored and there's nothing to read. There's like so much history, and history is insane, and I love it. And the anthropology was crazy, because cultural anthropology, it's like you study not only the cultures, but you study the architecture, you study the colors, you study the religions, you study how things are broken apart. So it's just like, man, that's Dungeons & Dragons. That's game building right there, you know?
Wow. Wow, so cool to see it, to think of it in that way, and it makes me want to go study anthropology now.
Oh, dude. So the cool thing is that you grab, what you do is that you go Barnes & Noble and you grab timeline books. This is how people should do it. They should grab timeline books of anthropology or timeline books of things, because then timeline books has every single thing in there, and something will hit your eye that you're like, oh, I want to venture into this further and study this further, and then you go into further.
I spend a lot of time in Barnes & Noble these days. My kids, just their favorite place, going up and down the escalator in Barnes & Noble. So I'm going to ditch them and go find some.
Oh, yeah, you guys go there. I go here.
That makes sense. It makes so much sense because you're right. And like whenever we have bad times, you know, often people will say this, the hope is that some great art will come out of it, essentially, like after a big recession or after, but with those kinds of changes you're talking about.
Yeah.
It starts when
the collapse starts. So whenever a situation or among the culture, the stuff starts collapsing, you get all the propaganda. You get different types of propaganda art. You get different all types of stuff. That propaganda art came from somebody that was just an artist not making money. Now he or she is teed off about the system. So,
yeah. Well, I'm definitely going to go. I don't usually make notes while I'm doing a podcast, but I am in this one. I feel like I'm learning things from you, as I always do. Really, really fascinating to hear about the inspiration for art, where it comes from, as opposed to studying, as you said, art history, which is the kind of the byproduct of really what it's about.
Yeah. Another thing that made me hone in on artwork was, since I was always into history and stuff like that, I always like reading tales of like heroes and stuff. And I got into gladiators, samurais, monks, all this. And there's a samurai called Miyamoto Musashi, which I'm really fascinated from. And he wrote the Book of the Five Rings. So I got into the Bushido Code, which is samurai Zen. And samurai Zen is basically a lot, you know, normal Zen is being enlightened by peace and tranquility and all this, but samurai Zen, Bushido Code, is the opposite. Your surfer is more at Zen with waves that can kill him. A soldier is more at Zen with the army charging at him. So it's Zen in the movement of Zen. And I realized to become fully an artist, you have to be, I took the Bushido Code. The Bushido Code was, whatever you do with a diamond mind. So if I'm going to garden right now, I'm going to garden to the T, and nothing outside in the outside realm is going to affect me. If I'm going to cook, I'm going to do the same thing. If I'm going to do my calligraphy, the same thing. So I made sure that everything I did was to the utmost degree of being an artist and doing it for the sake of finding out about myself. And I try to push that to myself to where, okay, if I have any confusion about where am I going, or any confusion about my religion, or any confusion about this, I'm going to find out myself, and I'm going to divide myself into many different factions, from either being warrior, tribeswoman, mother, father, all these different things, because that's in Japanese culture, that's what they did. They ended up dividing everything and just diving into whatever you want to do and become diamond mind. And by doing that, if you're an expert, or if you consider almost everything as art, you live art. So then you'll be able to accept things that you wouldn't think that is artistic before. So like a stain on the wall that you come by with some mold going in, but the way the pattern is and everything, it's like, oh my God, that could be millions of different things. I could use that for a view of another planet from a top view, that's the foliage yourself. So I was able to like break my mind from normal thinking and going beyond, like, okay, what can I make something into something else? And that was from just zenning out, man.
Wow. Are there any sort of techniques that you use for that? Or like, do you have any practices to, you know, like,
sometimes like when I want to zen out, or if I want to do some creation, they say that the best way to get in line is pretend you're in the womb. So I kind of pretend that I'm in the womb. When you're in the womb, you just heard the heartbeat. Nothing else was around you. So you got to block everything off and start blocking things off, and then start recreating what you think your womb, your mother's womb would be, with the water, with the rushing, with the blackness, with the warmth, with the heartbeat, with the, and then you can go off and go, okay, now I'm going to go fly into what I want to do. And I do that a lot before I'm going to design something or get into a whole other thing, just because I want to clear my mind of the world around me infecting me. Oh, what is this? Is this a car payment, or is this, you know, mail coming in, or is this another project? So I kind of cleanse myself that way when I'm going to go, okay, I'm going to put in about 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 hours into this thing right now. Or even when you're coming up with ideas, when you want to jot down ideas to break yourself from other projects, you want to give yourself a little thing to kind of break yourself and go, okay, how do I do it? Pretend I'm in the womb. And once you're in the womb, then you can go, you're in the universe. You can fly anywhere, go to any world you want, on any place you want.
Wow. So cool. So cool. And it's such, it's interesting because I feel like it's more relevant now than it ever was, because we've created so much distraction now. We've created so much noise or potential for distraction that it feels like it's even more important now.
Oh, it's harder and harder every day. That's why it's like, as much as you create and as much as you live, you have to, your body and your mind's a temple to where you have to give to yourself too. So you have to make sure that you cultivate yourself as, I'm going to bring peace to myself. I'm going to bring separation from the world to myself. You have to have time for yourself. And I mean, it's hard to do, but even if you do it mentally and you try to do it mentally, that's why it's like, you know, I look at the clouds, you know, look at the clouds and see how beautiful the clouds are, and then go beyond the clouds. And then there's all these stars, and one star is a planet. And then there's, you start thinking that, and it's like, you can get lost, which is sometimes you kind of need, because we're so anchored in society and our rules that it kind of stops us from creating, because we're afraid, oh, is this going to make money? Am I just wasting my time? It's like, it doesn't matter. You're expanding your brain. You're expanding your universe. And you're letting your brain go, I'm going to go this way. I didn't really know that I could do calligraphy. I didn't really know I could do poetry. I didn't really know that I can garden. I really didn't know. And me gardening and doing poetry and calligraphy and like snorkeling, that has so much to do with my creative worlds, too, because my plants are gigantic offshoots of like sea creatures and things that I've gardened. You know what I'm saying? So everything ties together. And it's like, so even though if you don't think it's going to make money, go for it. If you think your body, your mind will expand, expand it. It's like, you'll use it. You'll use it without even you even knowing it, you know?
How do you balance your own personal creativity with the stuff that we do for, you know, the machine, if you like? We're all usually artists who are being
hired. One, have more than one computer.
Good.
So yep. While you're working, you could reset things that you're doing off rendering on your own time, so it's not taking up their time, but you can still be doing asset stuff when stuff is saving, you know. Two, I'm always sketching, always writing notes. Wherever I go, I have different types of little sketchbooks and notes. And that's the thing. I write notes all the time, write ideas all the time. I might not know what they are, but if I go out and I see somebody doing something, I'm like, oh, a little lady doing that, handing this off, and there's a guy there, write this note. That's a great scene. I don't know what it'll be. Might be a scene for a religious thing that I want to do with Unreal. Might be a scene for a painting. Might be anything, you know? So I try to like, what I try to do is that I try to look at the world for answers of inner tranquility. And those answers of inner tranquility, I take them in, I put them in notes, and then I try to process them out as artwork of some sort, so I can kind of show what I'm learning on a daily basis. That's where I get a lot of my ideas for the emotional settings and stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah. Makes sense. And how do you kind of capture those things? Do you sketch digitally? Do you just sketch on paper?
Sketch with
good old pen and paper.
Good old, my sketchbooks.
Yeah.
Just wow. Filled. I have like tons of those. And the thing is, sometimes like if I'm driving and I notice something really out of the crazy ordinary, like a train station area that has this weird thing and I like it, I don't care where I'm going, I'll pull over, take a couple little pics with my phone, boop, 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 boop. Go on Pinterest. I have a Pinterest thing, which is basically my scrapbook, amazing, crazy scrapbook. And I just throw everything on Pinterest. So whenever I'm creating too, things that I wanted and things that I've seen, I have that up on another monitor while I'm creating stuff, going at looking at other people's ideas, looking at things that I references, you know, and I'm constantly looking at, and another thing is constantly books, comic books, movies, TV show. I try to, I do too much, but that's how you go crazy. Well,
it makes sense how you have the resume that you do, and the number of movies you worked on. You're quite prolific. Given all of this, how do you, what's it like when you're with a client? You have you're a fountain of creativity of so many ideas. Like if you have a sort of more, I don't know, a brief with kind of more, where it's more spelled out. Do you like sort of challenging people and saying, hey, have you thought about
this? Yeah, depending on the client and stuff. But when I'm dealing with clients or directors, you have to watch out because a lot of people don't want their idea to be squashed. Hmm. So I never squash anybody's idea. If I see somebody and they have an idea, I'll go, oh, that's a great idea. But what if you had a little bit of this and you have a little bit of that? So I always do the add-on technique. Mm. On somebody's idea. Never do the, oh, that idea is this. This is a better idea. You always give them their kudos, and then you do little small add-ons. And if you have, and if you want to change the idea of theirs and not offend them, you want them to agree with you, you have to hit them with little ideas, little by little by little, that then you go, oh, if we do this to this, what do you think? Oh, then they continue the conversation and I allow them to add ideas. So it looks like it's a collaborative thing, which it is. So then we could add more ideas and I do that. But a lot of when I deal with directors and clients and stuff, what I do is that I often, you know, you listen and I take what usually they have and I go beyond. So instead of having my own ideas, because I have my own ideas for everything. So I don't need to be pushing everybody my ideas. Mm. What I want to do is I want to push their ideas further. That's what they're asking me here to do for their job, for my job. So I make sure I listen and I make sure, oh, their idea is pretty cool, but they might be missing this. They might not even thought about this direction. They might not even thought about this direction. So whenever I'm talking to people and they're telling me stuff, I was like, oh, I'll agree with it. Give them kudos, but then add to it, always add to it. And then let them continue. And then they'll go, oh, that's cool. And then they start throwing tons of information that they didn't even know they had and that you're getting because you need to create something for them. So I love it. It's like a puzzle. It's like a puzzle piece. It's like when you deal with people, I have to find a way to let them, allow them to open up their minds and know that even if you spout mistakes or things that don't work, it's okay because we're brainstorming right now. So throw me things, ideas. That was shit. Oh, that's fine. What about this? Oh, we fixed this up. Let's do it. Don't be afraid of stuff. So I try to make sure that whoever I'm dealing with, they feel comfortable in giving me things that I'm not going to judge them for anything that they say. And I'm going to enhance whatever their idea is anyway. And I think that's very important when you're dealing with people.
Absolutely. Yeah. We're emotional creatures. Yeah.
And I'm a jester, so
it's really, really important, I think, advice there. You know, many of the people I think listen to this are artists of various types and work with clients a lot, and I think that the human side of this is equally as important as the tools that we're using and learning. When talking about design and sketching and getting into Photoshop, which starts to get into computer graphics of a sort, but you've pushed further than that and got into using 3D tools and now are really loving using Unreal Engine and doing some extraordinary things with it. How has 3D and Unreal influenced your creative process?
Well, I've always liked 3D, but like again, when I started my career, I started my career early in the 2000s, early 2000s. And during that time, it was like, you're either 3D, you're either 2D. So there was a big, you want to be a good concept artist, don't go to 3D because it takes forever to create something where you could just sketch it. But as time passes, that process has gotten so much faster, especially with when ZBrush came out. Then it was like, oh, we can design things that are not angular, that are not mech looking, you know? So once ZBrush came out, I got into 3D heavy. I was always into 3D mildly, but then I got into 3D heavy to where I can, oh, I can create actual, what the curvatures that I want, the armor that I want, you know, I can do all types of crazy stuff. And then I got into 3D just creating for concepts, just for pieces and stuff like that. Never thought about, I thought about it moving, but it's like, okay, you have to have a whole team. I have to have an animator. I have to have compositor. I have to have VFX Houdini guys. I have to have all this stuff. So I'm always like, okay, if I want to tell a story, I'm going to get into writing, and I got into writing, but I'm also going to get into comic books, because then I can create whatever story I have and make it from a storyboard. Instead of just doing a storyboard, I'll do a graphic novel first and change it up. And even if it's only like a 10 pager or 8 pager, it's for me to be able to look at and go, okay, boom. And then after that, I end up getting into more 3D. And then when Unreal came out, I was like, tired of waiting for a group of people to do something, a project that will take like a 5-minute project with a group of people will take before months. Maybe 2, 3, 4, 5 months,
yeah,
depending if they have time. And when Unreal came out, I was like, what? I can do this in about 8 weeks, 4 weeks by myself. And then I just like, okay, I got to get with this. And then the more I got into it, I was like, I think I could do Unreal faster than me drawing a comic book now, which wow. is really weird, because I was doing the comic book first, because I was thinking, oh, I could do a comic book way faster than doing a short. And now it kind of reversed itself. So what I do now, Unreal has made me just go crazy. And now what I do is that all these different things that I had, like concepts and stuff, I have a crazy library of like kit bash things. And now I just create in ZBrush curvatures and pieces and shapes that I know that I'll use this for a tank thing. I'll use this for armor. I'll use this for a building piece. Same pieces. I just use and stretch them out, and I use them for different things. So Unreal made me do that, because now it's like on the fly, I can bring my curvature and my designs to a world where, okay, I'm going to create all types of stuff. So it just, it's weird. Now my concept now has gone from being a 2D concept. When I design concepts, I'll do your 2D images and stuff, but also I'm going to include a 3D image now with movement. Of just atmospheric, even if it's only 30 seconds and nothing really is going on, it's just to get a little play and feel. And that's going to be my new forte, is what I'm going to be doing. And that's what I do all the time now.
Wow. So it's for clients too, like
for clients, movies. Like, yeah, it's like, just like, here, I'm going to be doing this. We built all this. I've done all this, and I'm using Unreal for some rendering, and I'm using Unreal for atmospheric things, for 2D images and stuff. It's like, here's your little movement thing. Here, have fun with your NFT.
And what's the, yeah, that's right. What's their reaction to seeing that?
A lot of people blown away, yeah. Like a lot of stuff that when I'm doing those type of things, I'm like, how many people are on your team?
Right.
Like, no, I don't sleep. It's just me alone. I was like, how long did that take? And I tell people how long it takes. Like, okay, hours. That took me about 200 hours, you know, or hours that took me about 40 hours or 30 hours. But like when I do their little NFT things, I'm already getting paid using Unreal and building it. So it's not taking me hours off of my time. I'm already building it. So the right. little creation that I make, how long did that take you? Oh, it took me 2 hours. And the thing right. is, they love it. And they look at it, they get to show their friends, they get to show their stuff, and then you get more work that way.
I bet. Yeah, they must, I mean, must be pushing other people in the industry to like start taking these skills on too.
Oh, I have a lot of friends that are teed off.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot of art friends that are not into 3D.
Yeah.
And they're getting mad that they're getting rejected because they don't know 3D.
Right.
And a lot of that, and that's happening across the board, you right. know, and they're not mad at me. They're just mad in general. Like, I've been 20 years doing it, pushing this, you know, 2D only, 2D only, and now the world's expecting you to know 3D, even if you're just an artist.
Right.
Yeah.
But the gift in that, you know, in growing and learning, as you know, is it makes you fall in love again with what you do. You have to learn. If you stop learning, your passion drops down.
Oh yeah. The only thing I get mad at is, why is this not working right now?
Right. Why did it crash again? Pens don't crash.
Well, maybe it's not even crashes. It's things disappearing from rendering in Unreal.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like a lot of my spawnables just disappear when I try to render. It's like, what's going on with that? So
I've been doing that since the beginning of computer graphics. Don't worry.
But well, that's the thing. It's like another thing is that you got to like technology too. Because as much as you think that the 3D and the world does stuff for you, you have to understand that, like you said, stuff crashes. You're putting so many different type of software packages together that you better be a Han Solo or a Princess Leia with technology and go. The more you want to play, the more you have to learn. And that's what the cool thing is. It's like, not only am I learning art every day and learning the skill of like how to put things together every day, I'm learning how things work, how to create a fake world, how to create different things. It's like my artwork has gone beyond now, rather than just being a pencil and a Wacom and a 3D thing. Now it's coming to where it's like, I'm thinking like compositors now. I'm thinking like cinematographers now. I'm thinking like what lens, what atmosphere, what I'm starting to bring in everything. I'm world building. So that's what Unreal has brought out. To me, is that Unreal has made me understand that when I'm designing stuff, I'm not just going to create an image. Now there's more of a reason behind that image because I have to build it.
Right.
To where it's like, oh, I didn't even realize, oh, if I want to emphasize this and I can't really see this wind thing, maybe I could put a bunch of like flying kites here or things here that shows winds or sails that gets that effect. So you understand that it's like, it helps you build a story further with whatever you want to do.
Right. Wow, that's so cool. And a question that came in from the audience here, which I think we've just been talking about a little bit, but someone's saying, what would make a concept artist stand out? And I think you're describing what makes them stand out today being a little different than what it was before.
I think what will make a concept artist stand out is that whatever you do, like, I try to mimic everybody's style because that's for you to get jobs. If you want jobs, you got to mimic everybody's style and you got to be able to do every type of style there is. But you always have your own style that you can allow to bleed into all those things that you have to replicate. And that's what I try to do. And I try to that bleed in that style of mine, I feed it every day. So, and what I try to do to stand out, the style, your own style, try to make it to where if you see 20 things that you like, take those 20 things, combine them all together and put it into your style. And now that's yours. And you keep that in your little pouch. And when you start creating, maybe you can put it out a little sprinkle there, a little sprinkle there, a little sprinkle there. But I have a lot of friends that tell me, hey, did you work on this? Oh, I thought so. I had your look on it. And I never even thought that would ever happen to me before. But that just happens from me doing what I'm saying to do. And I think by doing that, it makes people feel that you're more unique because not only can you replicate things, you could put a twist on it. So I think if you want to become something that stands out, study everybody's stuff, learn everything you can. Because even if you do not like the style, somebody else does and learn to like it, but you don't have to incorporate it into your world. But then whatever you incorporate into your world, you can bleed into those other styles. And I think that's what they look for out there.
A little originality.
Yep.
But within the bounds of...
Within the bounds, because nobody wants some... prima donna going off designing stuff. It's like, no, that's not my idea anymore. It's like everybody wants to, they want their ideas. They just don't have the means to express it themselves. That's why you're being hired, is so you can help them express it. You don't want to overtake it.
Fantastic answer. And given what you just said as well, would you recommend as a concept artist to be, sounds like, to be learning 3D these days?
Yeah. Well, another thing is that, think of it this way. If I'm a concept artist and I'm asking you to learn 3D and I'm telling you to learn 3D, just don't take it as, oh, I got to do this because I can't have a job. No, I'm pushing you further, because if I was your teacher and we had these means, I would say take it to 3D, because when you're drawing it, you're only doing it from one perspective. So you might not be doing it correctly. You might be going, okay, it might kind of look good here, but you didn't know that if you turn it now, you're missing mass on the other side, or your volumes are not right. This 3D helps you learn faster, actually, because when you build stuff in 3D and you move it around, and then you can go change your camera lens and you see the punch getting really close, you're like, now I know why that does it. Change your camera lens. It's like, you can't do that if you just do 2D. So 3D is going to help you learn mass and volume of whatever you want to create way better. And if you start learning mass and volume that way in a 3D form, you'll be able to put it in 2D way faster.
Right. Well, amazing advice here. I'm now really fascinated, given all the things that you've talked about and given what we're going through as a culture now in art, going through from cave paintings all the way up to Unreal Engine, and now this next path that we seem to be going down, which is all this machine learning, AI, as people are calling it. What is your take on where that that adventure is? Because we're so early in it, at least.
It's a pity these monkeys allowed AI to go out and unleashed itself. They should have never done that, because I like AI, but because I mean. From AI is just, if we can have machines create, so be it. But you know what? Name that machine. Make him into an artist. Make that as an artist. You know? And the AI thing of coming up with, when AI first came out, the visual stuff, I was using it. I was like, oh, this is cool. I was making like Eggman, you know, for my comic book. And I was like, okay, I want a different take on Eggman. Boom, 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 boom. Eggman that have this. And I went through a bunch of prompts and I was getting weird, crazy stuff. And I was getting some cool stuff that I was like, oh, that's cool. That's cool. And I was loving it because I wasn't using it as, oh, this is mine now. I was using it as, I like this. I like this. I like this. I'm going to take this. Now I'm going to create something using that as reference. So yeah. I was using it as more of like a reference of what to do, what not to do, because that's like looking on the internet anyway. But yeah. Now you're controlling it. And then the whole ideal of, all these people that didn't do artwork started doing it and calling it art themselves became a problem. And then our industry almost became fanatical of what side you're on. Are you on the AI side or the art side? To the point that it's like, nobody's going to say they're with the AI side if you're an artist now. You know, of course, I want the artist's rights to have their rights. And of course, the copyright issues, I understand, which is perfect, because it's like, look, AI art is not copyrightable. Perfect. Then just use it for reference. Do whatever you want. Even when I go online and I'm studying things to do stuff, I'll type in AI art design steampunk and just see what's out there. I'm like, dude, that's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Okay. I like what you did there. I like what he did there. I don't care who it is. It's just knowledge. It's more information. But I'm not taking that stuff and going, this is mine. I'm making sure that now I don't touch AI now, because of nobody wants AI. And like, you don't touch it now, you know, even though that, oh, I would have loved to like just typed in certain things for reference and stuff like that. But I think AI is going to take over once they figure out a way to like say Sophie, that robot in that has her own rights. If they fed her, if she started doing artwork, who's to say that artwork's not hers and she's an AI? You know? So now it's like, that's what I'm saying. It's like AI artwork I like, but give credit to the robot. You know, it's like, oh, this robot did this. Oh, that's great. Oh, that's cool. You know, but it's going to infiltrate and we're going to have to live with it. And it's going in everything we're working in, because everything we're working in, Photoshop is getting inundated with AI stuff, which, you know, I try to use. It does okay, but it's not that good. I'm faster doing my own thing.
Right.
But certain tools, if you have tools that are hidden away that are utilizing AI, so be it. Who cares? You know, but it's a weird battle. It's like a battle that Macs and PCs had when they first started. Are you a Mac user or are you a PC user? Now, everybody is like, if you're an artist, you have a PC and you might have a Mac. It's like, you could have both. But I don't know.
It's difficult. It's very polarizing. It's very hard to predict entirely where it's going. Although lots of people out there are confidently predicting where it's going to go daily. But really, nobody knows. But we get the question a lot at the school in terms of learning things. Like, what should I learn now? And often the question comes up, like, what should I bother learning art? Because aren't these things going to be doing all of this in the future? And I know what my answer is to that, but I'm curious, because to me, I tell people that, you know, art's in the eye more than it is in the hand, and really culture.
Well, the thing is, I say art too, because AI, all the art looks the same.
Yeah.
All the AI art looks the same to me. It's like I could pick it out. Tons of people can pick it out. It's too ultra detailed. It's too smashed up with too many items to kind of candy eyes everything to the point that there's no focal point in most objects. It's
quite trippy, a lot of it.
Yeah, it's trippy. It's great, but it's out of focus mentally because that's what the AI is missing, is the focal point of the storytelling. So it's storytelling. So even if you do prompts, because I even see the people that do prompts and do nice storyboards of the prompts and stuff, but there's no real change in color. There's no real change in camera lenses. Everything still stays the same depending on the prompter. And that's the thing. It's like an artist that has 10 images will do 10 complete images that look completely different. The AI thing that's happening is looking too much the same. So you're still going to need artists to break out of that thing, because the thing is that the world's getting inundated with the AI art. So AI art is not impressing everybody like it used to, because everybody's looking at things and going, oh, that's cool. Is that AI? Oh, okay. So they're just blowing it away off now because, oh, it's AI. Even though that, dude, if a human did something like that, it'd be, whoa, that's insane. But we're getting so used to it to the point that the people that are creating IPs are not going to want people to look at it and people are going, oh, that's AI. You can tell that's AI. No, they want something to jump out of the AI box now. And that's only humans could do that. And only humans that can do that are the ones that are embracing AI, as understanding that you're not going to fight against this creature that designs faster than you. You can learn from it and you could utilize it just like it's utilizing you to create. So
what would you say today, if you were starting out today, what would you go and do? Would it be similar to what you did yourself to learn to draw, to learn to understand?
Yeah, I mean, it's really weird because it's like, if I would make a course on artists to make money, it wouldn't be any college courses that I went through. Because like you said, like we were talking before, it's like cultural anthropology. History, I mean, architecture, everything. I would enforce that knowledge upon the people to study, because AI and machines can get that knowledge automatically. So you're not going to compete with them. What you're going to do, they're going to hire you for your style. So if you want to specialize and go, you know, I want to be a 3D artist that does this, or I want to be a manga artist, or I want to be an art director that does this or video games. It's okay to specialize, but understand that as you grow and as you learn, you start realizing what you're good at, and that might change your direction of what you were studying. I changed my direction because I went with the flow of what I was good at and also what I wanted to do that I didn't have the means to do before. Because I've always wanted to create my own world, but I knew I wasn't a writer, so I could draw. And then I was like, okay, I could do comic books, but now I don't want just people who do comic books to look at it. I want people who do movies. So then you go to concepts. And now I want to be a director because I want to make my whole thing. So your path is always going to be ever changing. You should understand that. But it's okay to pick something along the art line that you like and go, you know what? I really like creating environments and designing environments. I'll do concept, 2D concepts of environments, and I'll do 3D world building of environments. So I can get jobs in architectural design. I can get jobs in doing movies. I can get jobs in video games. I can get jobs in anything to deal with that. You know, so I look at specializing and thinking of what makes you the happiest to create, and then figure out what areas makes money in those areas, and go, okay, I have to hit all those areas. So I got to take it to 2D sketch, take it to ink sketch, take it to the actual knowledge of writing down paragraphs of what's inside the information, taking it to the actual building the structure of drafting the items and stuff, to take it to building in 3D, to take it to showing them an example. And that broadens the whole thing to where it's like, okay, you still have a goal that is going in one direction, but you can do all those different ways of creating whatever you want to create. That will give you access to get more jobs, because somebody will go, you know, I don't want the 3D part, but I want that ink version thing that you did. Can you do that of my project? You know?
So it sounds like you're a fan of generalism and having multiple skills and exploring them. It's hard to have them all. Do you have any sort of thoughts on which ones, or like, is there a feeling that you get from one where you're like, I really want to, I know you've really jumped into Unreal. Was that like a feeling that you got? Can you boil it down to a hair standing on your heart?
Yeah. So like, for example, I never thought I would ever get into sound. I'll just have one of my sound friends do it. But to get one of my sound friends to do anything on their own time, I was like, so I had to learn sound with Unreal. But Unreal made it so easy for me to learn sound that everybody was like discouraging. All my sound friends were discouraging me and going, oh, you know, you shouldn't do that. Oh, you don't got Pro Tools. It's going to take forever. And then when I did stuff with sound Unreal, all of them were like, you did that? Yeah. How long did it take you? 2 weeks? You did all that in 2 weeks? Yeah. By tutorials and everything. So Unreal does that to me. Unreal, things that I was afraid of doing, because I would think that that's just a rabbit hole of creativity that I'm just going to dive into, from sound, particle effects, to environmental effects, to camera lenses, to movement of camera, used to scare me, because I was like, oh, dude, I have to make sure I'm always good at doing what I do. But now I'm trying to push myself to, like I said, diamond mind on every part of your creation. So sound, compositing, texturing, weathering, everything. It's like Unreal has made it to now, it compartmentalized it too, to the point that if I get teed off, then I'm like, this shit's not working on sequencer. It's like, I'll just go back to the sound thing and I'll start doing the sound thing and I'll figure out my sequencer thing later. And that's another thing I love about the Unreal thing, is that all within one package, I'm still working on my project. And if I come to a blockade, I can veer off that blockade and go into something else and still be working on my project. Mm-hmm. I don't have to stop my project and go, what am I going to do? I'm going to have a coffee and go have a smoke or something, or go do something. No, it's like, you know what? Screw you. I'll figure you out. I'm going to go do sound. And then online, you go check your little tutorials, or call your friends, or bug your tech friends. Hey, man, you have this problem?
So encourages play, essentially. It means you can keep
playing. Well, that's the thing. It's like we were talking before earlier. It's like I feel like I'm 10 years old playing G.I. Joes or model building. I used to always get into building dioramas and building things. So I have all my models around me. And I still use my models. I take my models, I build them, and I put them next to me. And, for example, I build my little things like this. And it's like, and then I put it next to me while I'm building Unreal stuff. and I look at the little piece, I'm like, okay, I got this. Or I build this and I painted this.
Cool.
So I have as many toys as possible around me to where I like shapes and stuff. And while I'm in an Unreal and I'm creating things, now before when I would just look at my shapes and go, oh, I can make a cool concept. In Unreal, I can go, oh, I know that thing that I just saw is three shapes. I put three shapes together. I make the movement. And I just have a little movement and placement of in an atmosphere in a land. I'm like, I'm going to replace that with something I'm going to design. I already made a little scene. So it makes me think differently about things. Sometimes before I would always have to come up with the object, the main focus of the design. Now, sometimes I world build and create, like, I just want to do a little garden in Unreal and do that. And then something else will come in my mind. Oh, this structure might be cool here. Or this thing walking might be cool here. So it gives me a different way of creating now when I have like blockades, you know?
It seems like that's something that we're going to want to keep doing despite how powerful words to image or words to video gets, like the ability to just be in a world and explore it and noodle on it. I feel like that's something that's just inherently human as an act.
Well, that's the thing. It's like, you know, we're almost inner exploring. The world's gotten to the point that I explore outside, but now with Unreal and VR and 3D and how fast you can create your own world, you can create worlds and inner explore and go, you know what? What if I was thinking I want to create a tree that looks like a fish that moves around and moves in the sand soil and things that don't exist rather than just putting it in AI and trying to go, oh, I'm going to build this in AI. I'm like, no, I'm going to do this and make it happen and see it move. And just, it's going to be simple. It's not going to be as hard as people think, because once you understand the movement of things and the storytelling and your story structure, just start building it. And that's the thing. It's like when I build in Unreal things, when I first build them, I don't like how they look. But then I'm like, oh, you know what? The mechanics are coming in and they're taking out these wheels and putting in these better wheels. The gunners are going, these guns don't look good. You know what? This castle, the rocks, they didn't like the rocks. They're going to do this structure with obsidian stalactites or something like that. It's like you get to build on the fly and change things on the fly. So you can play games with yourself as, you know what? It's not just you. It's you and your mind crew going in and going, oh, the religious people said that they want the church to have the temple to be a lot higher than you got going over there. And where's the statues? It's like, if you're saying this is, so I play those type of games when I'm doing Unreal.
That's, I know, cool. It's I think how it should be. You know, when first I was saying the other day, the first 3D model I did was in Notepad. It was typing the numbers of all where all the vertices were. It was so artistic of a process. It was like you had to be really like in your head modeling the thing so that you could then type these numbers out, then hit render and wait for a while, then you could see the picture. There was no viewport, there was no interface. It was just numbers in a text field, not text field.
But see, that's so cool, because that's what industrial design is. How do I put these numbers, and all of a sudden these numbers become something solid? It's like I don't even comprehend, even though I know how to do it.
But it's so much more fun to play with. It's nice having gone through that, a bit like it was going through the darkroom and having to process your own photographs. Yeah. No one's doing that anymore. No one's doing the Notepad modeling anymore either, for the most part. But it's amazing how far we've come to the point where you can play in 3D, and you can even invite your friends in there. You can actually have multiple people in Unreal.
Hang out at my friend's house in Santa Monica, and I would go there and go, come on over, I'm creating stuff. And he would have an extra set of VR glasses, and he would go in, and I go in his world, and he's creating his castle and stuff with VR, with sculpting and stuff. And he goes, do whatever you want to do. And I got to create my own stuff, and I would take it, and I would be able to save it and save it in an FBX file. And I'm like, oh my God, dude, how cool is that?
That's awesome. I think that's where it gets really fun with all of this stuff, is when you get to do it with other people, when you get to like play.
Well, the ultimate goal, I think, it's going to be the holodeck. It's holodeck, creating things on the fly in the holodeck. That's where all this is going to take us, to the point that we won't need any VR glasses or VR helmets. There might be like contact lenses or something that you just put in, and all of a sudden you can have them on and off, and you're in your normal world, and at any time you could switch on to the VR world. And then you could do anything. So we'll be able to live in two dimensions at the same time, or right, multiple dimensions at the same time. But I think that's where it's going to go.
I have the screen down here. That's the Sony SRD, and it's like a stereo display, 27-inch auto stereoscopic display. So there's no glasses. It's fully 3D. It looks awesome. And you can actually move your head around and look around things because it tracks where your eyes are. Mm-hmm. So you can actually look around it, and you have some agency in the world. It's so cool. I'm like, I think it's not quite the holodeck, but
it's pseudo holograms. It's getting there. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. We're getting there. I think the holodeck stuff might come out in maybe, I'm hoping, less than 10 years.
You heard it here first, folks. I hope so too. I think being able to play and being able to play with others and create is just what we're designed for, really. It's what we like doing as artists, right? Well, do you have like a favorite project you worked on? Any like cool out of all the movies, like 50 movies or 100, like 200 movies? I don't know how many.
Yeah. Like one of the coolest things was when I worked on Minority Report with Steven Spielberg. Mm. I got hired by McDonald and the art director there, and they had all this artwork up with all new technology that was that hasn't come out yet about this movie. And they were getting real technology to build this movie. So the gloves were real technology, all types of things were real technology. And I was hired as a visual futurist to see what didn't work and what doesn't work. So I remember that there was all these, they had all these buildings, and I was like, where are all the cars? And it's like, all the cars were stuck on the building side. And I'm like, oh yeah, everybody parks in their building right next to their drive, their apartment. And that's where they park. And I'm like, how many households, you know, have only one car? And he was like, oh yeah, that's right. So then I got to help build the buildings and make it to where it was multiple structures. I got to design different things of that whole movie, from spiders to the city structures. And then there was another thing to where, you know, where in the movie they were like taking, it was like when we had zip drives, but the zip drives were glass in a movie, and they were like grabbing it, putting it into another structure. And I was like, one day we're going to be able to like just go and network, and you don't have to use that anymore. And in that movie was fun because that movie was using technology that we didn't have yet, that in 3 years we started using.
Wow.
It was so weird. I was like, oh, dude, this is so cool. I didn't even know half this stuff existed. But a lot of the Avenger movies, Guardians of the Galaxy, of course, was great. Game of Thrones was cool to work on. I mean, everything's really cool to work on. It's like I always get inspired because it's just like everything, as you know, every movie that they try to work on, they try this new technology that they don't have yet to try to make something cooler than anybody else, and we don't know how to use it properly yet. So that's always part of the project. It's like, oh yeah, see how these guys did the water? Yeah. Now we're going to do a water. Let's see if we could do water better. So every project's become something to where it's like I had to learn something to just enhance myself. So I love working with people. I mean, I love the mindset of like everybody putting their ideas together to come up with something that maybe one person had the idea was this big. And then when you have about a team of 200 people, after 4 or 5 months, that thing is a monstrous design that is cohesive, you know? And that part is cool. Seeing things grow, you know?
That's cool. It's cool to hear the Minority Report story, and just thinking of like how thoughtful the process is in not just coming up with stuff that looks cool.
No.
Like, does it
everything
make sense?
That does they design, like I had to design an apartment. He goes to me, he goes, I want you to design an apartment in 2030 that's 30 years old, but it is based on a 70s design that's all equipped with medical equipment that cleans out the apartments in the 2020s. So I was like, okay, 70s design, 30 years old, so it's dilapidated, and it's 20 years behind on technology, but the technology is really advanced. So it's like I had to make a moldy 1970s looking Blade Runner room and stuff. But I had so much information I had to study before I can even start putting that stuff together. So that movie made me like, oh, okay, this is how I want to start designing things on the. And so after that, I molded myself to design everything based on that way. Nothing was just about, oh, does it look pretty? Oh, put a couple wires there. Put that. What are those wires for? Oh, those wires are for the medical system and the TV system that doesn't work, and they pulled them down to replace them with new ones. It's like, right. They went so in depth with design to where it's like, you have, like when you see a house, you see houses have extra cables that are sitting outside that are old cables. They went in that far into design.
So. It's the things that the person watching it wouldn't necessarily know that that's the story, but because it has one, it all makes sense together somehow. Yeah.
Well, that was the thing that Blade Runner did. It's like Blade Runner made everything look so real because there was so much excess stuff on there that was just easy to the eye because we were used to. So we were able to accept it and go, oh, I understand this world. I know where all that junk is, stuff that doesn't work, but that stuff is stuff that doesn't work. So I started incorporating that more in my designs to where it was like, whenever I design stuff, there's always those things outside of it that doesn't work and those things that we don't notice that feeds into that design anyway.
Wow. Yeah, super cool to hear about it. With some of your work that you're doing now, I know we've already posted links to your ArtStation, and I'm sure there's other places that people can follow you. Is there anything you'd like to share with the audience? Anything that you want to tell people about, any places people can follow you on?
But I would like to say, no, don't ever get discouraged. It's like, don't ever be discouraged. I've been discouraged so many times, but those are just obstacles that you get through, and just continue pushing your knowledge of whatever you want to do artwork. I would broaden your studies to things. So if you want to design, say you want to design a new race and a castle or a car, study plastics, study different types of materials, study structures, study plants, study everything. Because the more you study, the more it's going to make you happy when you create. I would just say follow me on my ArtStation and my YouTube channel. And my ArtStation leads to my YouTube channel. And I have comic books, and I'm constantly just pushing stuff out and just trying to get as much stuff out before, you know, the next phase of life.
Well, I'm looking forward to seeing the next things that you make, as always. And I really appreciate you for being on the podcast today, and for also doing so much with the school as well. You're incredibly generous with your time and helping us doing what we're doing at CG Pro.
I learn from students. That's the thing, is like, always know that you don't know everything and the world's got too much information. I always take myself as a baby in a world of knowledge. And even though that somebody might not know as much as you do in a certain subject, just understand they might have something so dire that you need that you don't know yet until you let them express it and share your experiences with them. Another thing I would say to people that was very important, a lot of my best artist friends that are successful, you know what we used to do together? We never hid our secrets. We never hid our secrets. A lot of people out there, artists, think, oh, I don't want to show this because other people get the idea. Everybody's going to get the idea. What you want to do is you want to show everybody how you do things so they can show you how you do things, so they can show you how they do things that you can learn. So what made me a good artist today is because me and my friends exposed ourselves to each other and showed, oh man, I suck here. Can you help me here with this? Yeah. Can you help me here with this? And we learned from each other. So that was my greatest advice is don't hide your secrets. Find a bunch of people that artists that you like that might piss you off because they might be a little bit better than you. Be friends with them. Because all my friends that are my friend artists, we all hate each other because we're all better than each other in ways that we're like, well, how'd you do that, dude? I did this and this. Dude, that's cool. Okay. You know?
That's so cool. Yeah, you definitely want to have other people around you who are better than you. If you don't, it's hard to grow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, some amazing words of wisdom there that I take personally on board, and I hope others who are listening do as well. Really appreciate you being with us today, Kino. I look forward to the.
Yeah, this was fun. I'll do this again.
Happily have you back on again, and definitely want to do the Bob Ross session at some point too, for sure. We'll get that going.
Then you can show people. I want to do a thing where Bob Ross thing where I'm creating a scene and I'm in the middle of the scene, so there's all different types of aspects of the scene, so people can inquire about different designs of how I came up with it, how I built it, or what I'm going to do with it. So it helps people further themselves when they're building their own scenes, you know, and I think that'd be fun.
Absolutely. Yeah, we'll make it happen. And I really appreciate all the things that you do coming and helping the school, because I know that you get a lot out of it. And I think it's just that in and of itself is great advice for anyone to have had a career like yours, where you've worked on so many iconic movies, but you still have that beginner's mind. You still know that you know.
Unreal is like so gigantic. It's like, I'm surprised certain students coming up with stuff. I'm like, oh my God, they came up with that. How? It's like, but that's what's cool about doing the classes and assisting. That's another thing. Here's another word of advice. Don't ever stop learning. I've taken classes my whole career, 30 years of my career. I've taken classes my whole time. I went through school the whole time, as much as I can. Don't ever think that, oh, I know this. You could always learn something new.
Yeah, that's a great one. Yeah, I think there's a lot of myths around being an artist, where you do it all by yourself and you like hold on to the knowledge and you have to like be really disorganized and chaotic, and like the opposite is really true.
We used to have powwows with me and four or five friends. Two of them might be writers, two of them might be artists. We used to sit down, hang out, have dinner, all sketching and writing in our books, and then maybe watch a movie afterwards. But we would talk about it when we were creating, and we'd help each other with, hey, I got an idea for this. What do you guys think about this? And we would powwow to create our stuff better. And that was the best time. I still do that kind of stuff, because that stuff is like magical, you know?
I totally agree. It's a good part of the why we set up CG Pro the way we did, so that it's very community driven. Try and create a space where people feel safe to be able to express and ask stupid questions or just share and collaborate. It's the way that we get better, for sure. Well, I don't want to end now, but I we'll do it again, and yep. We'll definitely shared a bunch of your links in the chat there. We'll set up the Bob Ross session. But yeah, thank you again, Kino. Really been a wonderful session. Thank you.
Cool. Have a good day, man. See
you. You too. And stick on for a second while I say thank you also to everybody else. Thanks to our audience. Thanks for being here and asking some questions. And if you are interested in us as a school, as I said, you can follow us at becomecgpro.com. You can also follow us in our Facebook group. We have an open day that is coming up on April the 2nd. If you want to come and check out the school, come and visit and have a free lesson and meet us and talk to us and all that good stuff. We also have a webinar coming up tomorrow on the 27th, which is about Unreal Engine, Unreal Editor for Fortnite. That whole new crazy universe that's opened up where you can create things in Unreal. and publish them online and have other people appreciate them and explore them dynamically. So really, really, it's had a year of life already, and we're going to do a webinar about that tomorrow. Anyway, thank you all. We'll see you again in a couple of weeks, and take care. Go out there and collaborate and make cool stuff.
Thank you. You're still going to stay on, right?
Yeah.